So the Avengers are fighting the X-Men again.
Yep.
Interesting fact, the Avengers and X-Men
Come on.
fought in the 60s, back when there was only like five each.
Yeah, no,
Oh.
they said that this is supposed to be like the biggest battle or the biggest battle that's ever happened in Marvel history, and I'm like, it kind of happened before, didn't it?
Well,
They
the
always
fact
say
that.
that, though.
Yeah, let's be honest, every battle's the biggest battle in Marvel history. And I think the one that really takes the cake was Fear Itself last year, which was so big, it took 8 months to finish.
Civil
Yeah.
War. Hello, that's another one.
Yeah, Civil War was pretty big.
Yeah, but this is like the most dividing one because it's all the mutant characters against everyone else. This is like some racial stuff going on.
What, you mean like all five mutants that are still left?
All
We'll get
200
into
of them.
that. But yeah, back in the 60s, the issue of X-Men where they cover Professor X's, wheelchair origin, they had the five original X-Men and the five only members of the Avengers fight. So I'm just looking forward to that rematch between Cyclops and Captain America.
I thought Wolverine was fighting Captain America, which, at least according to the covers, which doesn't make sense considering that in all the promo material up to that point, they're on the same side.
Yeah, the
Well, not the...
covers, they weren't all actually supposed to be taken literally as events that'll be happening in the issue, at least those pre-covers that they were releasing,
Oh,
apparently.
yeah, but in the preview images that have been released, like from the actual comic, it looks like Wolverine's siding with the Avengers. Mostly because Cyclops has become the ultimate douche.
No,
Again.
Cyclops is Magneto 2.0.
Yeah, Cyclops has
Exactly.
always been a bit of a douche, though.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
that's was going to be my argument. He's never been anything but a douchebag.
Yeah.
I'm so. Oh, don't hate me just because I'm good looking and I drive a great car and I'm banging Jean Grey.
Well, no, like the thing with him was that he was that lovable asshole. I mean, it was just he was an asshole because he needed to be that guy. Like the team needed that guy, the guy who would get the job done and all that wonderful stuff. But now it's just he's kind of crossed the line into, well, Magneto territory, post the whole like House of M thing. And it's just, it's he's willing to do anything to keep the future alive. And seeing as
For mutant.
Everything appears to be revolving around Hope, who is the supposed mutant messiah, which is funny because Cable is all like, "Ooh, we have to save her," and then Bishop is all like, "Well, she kind of causes this terrible future." I
So
kind
the
of side
usual
with,
Cable
yeah.
Bishop issue.
Yeah.
You know what? I side with Bishop on this one because he's from the nearer future,
Yeah.
and on top of that, Cable's future is absolutely terrible.
But
Well, but you
yeah.
made a good point that Cyclops is essentially turning into a Magneto 2.0. And they even kind of referenced that. They released a 7-page sneak peek at the first issue.
We were supposed to be the new evolution or something.
Yeah, just before that, he says, it could turn the tide because it'll give him power, true power to put the world back on track. And Magneto turns around and says, "You're sounding like me."
And I'm sorry, that should be a huge wake-up call. That should be
Yeah.
a...
Day. Well, I mean, this is really all kind of going back to the Schism event with X-Men. And, I mean, the Prelude books were, I mean, there were, what, like four or five of those where Cyclops sat down with all of his, like, advisors. One was Magneto, one was Wolverine, one was Professor X, who I missed the part where he started walking again.
Apparently that
But...
was as a result of M-Day.
Oh. So
Yes,
apparently
his
that
paralysis
cures
somehow
spinal
is a
trauma.
power.
What? But no, it's just this absolutely just craziness that went on, especially with Schism. And I want Wolverine and Cyclops to have at it one more time because their fight was great, and I want to see more of it.
Oh, their fights are always great, though, just because of
Yeah, but
that conflict they always had over Jean Grey.
this one was about the kids. That's what I liked about it.
Yeah, it was.
Wolverine never wanting a child to have to commit murder, and Cyclops being more than willing to, make a child take some dude's head off.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, Idy killed what, like 15 people. In that event, like
Can't remember.
it was more than 10, less than 20, you know, and did it very quickly. And I mean, her continued story arc in Wolverine and the X-Men is, you know, she's very damaged by this. You know, I mean, it's, I mean, I'd be pissed if I'm Wolverine.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, that's something I missed. When did Wolverine start being in control of the school? Or he made his own new school or something?
Yeah, after the end of Schism, he started the Jean Grey Institute for Higher Education, essentially, on the grounds of the old Xavier Institute.
Hmm.
And he took with him a handful of mutants, including Beast and Kitty Pryde, Iceman.
Iceman.
Yeah, all of his Uncanny X-Force people, with the exception of Psylocke. And
Jubilee, Toad. Actually.
And Toad.
I can't believe Jubilee. Go on, Clancy.
Yeah, like Toad. Toad is the janitor of the new school. It's, well, it's kind of disturbing.
It's kind of productive.
Yeah, but, you know, it's an interesting little dynamic. Yeah, Jubilee, but Jubilee's a vampire now, so whatever.
What?
Yeah, she's a vampire.
Yeah, Jubilee's a vampire.
See, I haven't kept up with a lot of the stuff in X-Men lately. I didn't know that Cyclops had become Juggernaut. I didn't know, apparently, that Wolverine had his own school.
In Colossus?
Yeah, but that
was a sorry, Colossus became Juggernaut.
Yeah, that was a big Fear Itself event, because they were trying to depower the Juggernaut, who was empowered by the Serpent, and so he made a deal with the demon that gives him his Juggernaut powers, and he became the new Juggernaut.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he's...
We need Colossus.
Yeah, exactly, but he's still Colossus, and still has all his normal Colossus stuff, but he can activate the Juggernaut powers on top of that.
At will, or does he have to have the helmet, or... Well, because the helmet was only...
The helmet, like, kind of just appears magically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Comics are weird.
This is why I gave up on a lot of Marvel stuff a long time ago.
Well, a lot of Marvel stuff right now is really good. Like the Invincible Iron Man story arc that's going on post Fear Itself is really good.
Amazing Spider-Man.
I don't know. Really? Spider Island was just weird.
I love the Cloak and Dagger Spider Island stuff, though. Just going to say that. But I don't know. I think that after they did a real good job with the Ultimates, making everything sort of streamlined again, and this convoluted crap is just, it's real difficult. And I don't think that they make it very easy for new people to break in, or people that took a few years off to break back into the stories.
Oh, definitely. And then on top of that, you add the fact that everything is an event now. I mean, we went from Fear Itself to Spider Island. Even the Venom book took part in Spider Island, and Venom has his own little mini event going on right now. Venom, who is now Flash Gordon, Flash Thompson,
Tom.
Whatever.
Flash Gordon would
Flash
be awesome,
Gordon, savior of the universe.
Yeah.
So, hey, but you know what? If it comes with a new Queen soundtrack, I'd be okay.
So someone's gonna hear that idea, and we're gonna have that crossover now.
Yeah,
I'm just worried how we're getting a new Queen soundtrack. You know, at this
It would be zombie Freddie Mercury coming back. That's what it would have to be.
But we'd have to kill him because he's a zombie.
Well, yeah, but it might be worth it.
But you know, so then there's that mini event going on. I have a feeling that the main story arc in Iron Man right now is going to become its own little mini event with War Machine and. Yeah, it's just you're right. You're absolutely right. The Marvel Universe is completely and terribly convoluted, especially given that post Flashpoint, the DC Universe is so streamlined and so easy to get into right now. I mean, we're 6 months in, and there's no major event. It's great.
It's true, and I think this is sort of a comic book issue, which is what I thought they learned from the Ultimates, is when they would start making things streamlined again, but I can't buy 30 books for one story arc from different people and keep track of all that. Like, you have to do a lot of work to keep up with all those events.
And Flashpoint was kind of like the beginning, or a thesis, if you will, for DC and their new universe, because you really only needed the Flashpoint books to get what was going on. Mm-hmm. Everything else was just kind of there, and if you wanted it, you could look at it and see what else was going on in that universe. Whereas with Fear Itself, you needed the Fear Itself books. You needed Invincible Iron Man. You needed Journey into Mystery. You needed, the Avengers. You know, you you needed all of those books. And I mean, you know, that was a 7-8 month run, you know, of an event. You needed all of these books to get the real full picture of what was going on. Because if you weren't reading, you know, Journey into Mystery, you wouldn't know all of the machinations behind the scenes that Loki was getting to make sure that the heroes could defeat the serpent. And if you weren't reading Invincible Iron Man, you wouldn't know where everybody got their weapons to fight all that stuff. And it was just, it was terrible.
And they don't even put it into trades either. Like, that's that's my biggest thing, is like, make it so you can put the storylines into graphic novels 1, 2, 3, 4, and I can go out and buy all those volumes, because I'd probably do it. But they don't even do that well.
Well, that'd be like if they did the Death of Superman story arc and didn't include the issues where the the Justice League issues in that. You know, it'd be like, oh, well, now there are just two giant jumps in the storyline, and for some reason, you know, Guy Gardner is all beat up, and I don't know why that happened. Oh, and Blue Beetle's dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hated that incarnation of the Justice League, by the way.
That was terrible. Any incarnation of the Justice League without, or pre-New 52, without Martian Manhunter, Batman, and Superman is just terrible.
And Wonder Woman, but I'm
biased. Well, and for me, Green Lantern. I mean, just Green Lantern, Aquaman, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman.
And Martian Manhunter.
And Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, but, who's not actually, the current Justice League, and I'm very sad about that. He's in Stormwatch.
Actually, to me, the worst event comic ever was the DC comic Amazon's Attack, mostly because the actual issues themselves did not cover everything that Wonder Woman was doing. You'd have to actually buy the Wonder Woman comic to find out what she was up to. It's like, it's her event. Why is she not playing an active role in it?
Yeah, because no one appreciates Wonder Woman.
It's actually one thing I'm looking forward to about Spider Island when they release the trade, is that the one trade, the Spider Island trade, has the Venom issues and the Amazing Spider-Man issues that are pertinent to the story of Spider Island, and all the other spinoffs are going to be put in another trade called Spider Island Companion. So it's not necessary to know what was going on Spider Island to buy the Companion, it just lets you know what your favorite characters were up to. I'm looking forward to that.
So the Companion is going to be like the monster manual for Spider Island or something, essentially, and Spider Island's going to be the player's handbook.
Pretty much. I mean, Spider Island covers the
nerd.
You know,
whatever.
But this is funny, because looking at Avengers versus X-Men, just the idea of who you would support. When in the 90s, I would have supported the X-Men, because, you know, the X-Men had the cooler lineup, had the cooler characters. The Avengers were just kind of like that cliche comic book supergroup that Marvel had to have to try and beat Justice League. And then after all the events of the last few years, you know, the Dark Reign, Civil War, everything, Avengers has become the cool book. Avengers is the book where all the important stuff in the Marvel Universe happens. And X-Men has just become, you're either there to see Wolverine do something cool or listen to Cyclops become more of a tool than he already was. So I'm just finding this so curious, because had this book been done 20 years ago, I'd have been all for the X-Men, because, you know, they were the outsiders. They were the rebels. They were whatever. And now I'm freaking siding with Iron Man and Captain America against the X-Men, just because they have stopped being as douchey.
When they rebooted it, when they, you know, broke up the Avengers and then everyone came back and, you know, Sentinel was put in, or Sentry, that was when they started being good. Like, I really liked the Avengers after they came back.
The new Avengers?
Yeah, I thought those were great books, and
that was when that's when I really started to get into Avengers again, because it's like, the last time I was reading Avengers was the 90s when Vision was all white and they had that other guy being Thor with the beard.
Oh, Thunderstrike.
Yeah, it's like I never could remember his real name. It's like, who are you? You are not Thor. You do not talk like a bad Shakespeare. You are not Thor.
Dude, Thor doesn't talk like bad Shakespeare anymore. Thor talks like awesome.
I know, but in the 90s, it was like, yo, you're not Thor.
Well, it's also in the 90s when you think about it. The writing for comics back then was pretty god-awful.
Back then.
There were a lot of great stories, and there were, like, don't get me wrong, and there were some great standouts, but your average comic book back then was just, it was a guide to how not to write anything, because the dialogue was just full of just needless exposition, and
someone was jumping.
Yeah, usually when somebody was jumping, telegraphing everything. Now, if I punch him in the face right now, I'll be able to knock him off his balance. Oh no, because I told him I was punching him in the face. He is now dodged, and now he's punching me in the face. You know, and.
There was this page, I remember this page where it's like it's supposed to be some monster jumping at some girl, and there's like a 3-page worth essay being spoken in midair. It's like, how long is this jump?
Well, they referenced that actually in a Deadpool issue when he's going a little crazy, and he's having Dr. Bong try to help him get out of it. So he goes to find Wolverine to get into a knockdown drag out fight. And starts the fight by actually giving Kitty Pryde a Shoryuken out of Street Fighter to piss off Wolverine. And Wolverine jumps at him and has like 4 or 5 dialogue bubbles as he's jumping straight at him. And Deadpool makes an actual commentary on that being one of his superpowers, the ability to, you know, exposition for 5 minutes while in midair in an attack jump.
Yeah, that's a pretty good superpower for Wolverine.
Yeah.
No, so Wolverine's greatest superpower is being in three team books at once.
Yeah. Oh, on top of 2 solo books. And and running the Uncanny X-Force and being the secret mutant hitman.
When are they ever going to realize that? I can't believe how overused Wolverine is now. God.
He's like Batman. Like, that's exactly it. Like, Batman has what now? 4 of his own books.
So Detective Comics, Batman, The Dark Knight, Batman and Robin.
And then you have Justice League. He's a recurring character in Justice League International. He's a recurring character in Batwing.
7.
He's a recurring character in Batgirl and Batwoman.
That's 9.
You know, I mean, he does everything. And like, and how Spider-Man. Does he... How does he convince people that, you know, like, how does he have time to go to work, and how has he not been ousted as CEO of Wayne Enterprises?
It's because he lets his underlings do the work for him. Remember, he's just a boring rich guy that does nothing all day, apparently.
Every character reaches that saturation point where they become so popular that Marvel or DC will just throw too much. Then, you know, they're not so popular anymore. They fade back, and then eventually they'll come back into style.
I'm actually worrying that this is what's happening with Spider-Man now. You know, he's on the Future Foundation. He's in the New Avengers, and he has his own solo book. And in that book, he's now a big-time super scientist, and he's developing all these new costumes and developing all this new tech to supplement both his living and to supplement his Spider-Man career. And it's like, I like the idea of him being on the Future Foundation. I like the fact that it's a big enough group that he doesn't have to be there all the time. I like that the Avengers don't need him all the time. But at the same time, it's worrying that he might become stretched thin. And the Clone Saga might actually make more sense now. Because he's split in so many places.
Here's the thing that I never quite got with Spider-Man. It's, okay. So he's super smart, right? Like, he's like up there Reed Richards intelligence. Why the hell is he always unemployed? I'm sure Reed Richards can put together 50 grand a year to give him a job.
Actually, the recent story arc of Spidey, like, you know, the big time storyline that they've done after the god-awfulness of Brand New Day. Well, what happened is that he's got no job, he's got no anything, and finally, Jameson's wife, who was a scientist, asks Aunt May, what is Peter's skills since he can't get a job as a photographer anymore? And she says, you know, Peter's a genius, and so she makes a few calls, and that's how Peter gets his super science job.
Well, if there's any good job reference, it's your aunt. If she can't get you into a multi-million dollar lab, nobody can.
Seriously, when you think about it, it's like that'd be like if Dick Grayson went up to Bruce Wayne and was like, hey Bruce, I'm kind of just got fired from the Gotham Police Department, can you set me up with a job? And he said no.
Well, Bruce, you know, would do that because he's a dick.
No, Bruce would be like, I'll make something for you. You know, he'd bring him in like building security, or put him with Lucius Fox there in like research and development, and so he'd never ever have to do anything. So,
but here's the thing: is that because of all the events that have happened in Spidey's life, I don't mean event like event comic. I mean just the things that have shaped the comics now. I mean, it makes sense that Spidey would end up getting this job because of Aunt May mentioning it, since Jameson's wife is now the mayor's wife, since Jameson's mayor of New York.
What?
You didn't hear about that one?
No. He's your friendly neighborhood spider mayor. Oh, no, wait, that was just in Spider Island.
Yeah. But, and then the other thing is Aunt May married Jameson's dad, which was terrifying for both Jameson and Peter.
How old is Aunt May?
I guess she's probably in her 80s.
She cannot die. She's magically enforced by the devil at this point, and I'm not kidding.
I don't know if it's still active, but at least for a short time, Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson were stepbrothers? Step-cousins or something?
Yep, something. It's still going on now. Like, it doesn't look like they're going to get rid of that anytime soon.
Oh, but Aunt May did almost move to Boston. That was interesting.
Aunt May almost married Doc Ock, which just puts bad pictures in my brain.
Yeah, no, that's not that I remember.
That makes more sense, though, than Jameson.
Spider-Man's life is just so screwed up.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, a woman would be pretty lucky to marry Doc Ock, especially, I don't know.
Have you seen him lately?
Well, especially if he has creative use of his multiple arms, then...
Go to the corner. Go to the corner now.
He could just go to Japan and he'd be a star, you know?
I was just about to say that. He could make some Japanese woman really happy long time.
Yeah, why stick around New York?
Good night, everybody.
Did everyone see the X-Men cover with Kitty Pryde being pregnant and molested by the Brood?
Yes. Oh, God, yeah, I saw that.
Okay, yeah.
That is one of the most ridiculous turnarounds in that issue ever. It was hilarious. And at the same time, Wolverine is going into space to win space poker for money.
It just that cover looked like a bad DeviantArt.
Space poker?
Yeah, no, what's going on there in the last issue is it turns out Kitty Pryde, like, she's all like, oh my god, I'm suddenly pregnant. But it turns out that microscopic Brood are in her system, and that's what's going on, and they're eating her from the inside out. And at the same time,
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, the school is out of money. So Wolverine takes Kid Omega up into space to some space station where he's going to play in high-stakes space poker to get enough money to keep the school running.
Now, are the rules of space poker different than normal poker?
I have no clue, but I imagine he's taking Kid Omega because he can, like, make people... He's like a telepath kind of stuff, so he can basically make him win.
Mm.
Kid Omega was the obnoxious little pink-haired punk with the glasses, right?
Yeah, who essentially started the whole schism thing.
Little racist bugger.
Yeah, and now he's in Wolverine's school.
Yeah. Discipline is going to be severe.
Oh, crap. Sorry, this is Marooner's Talk, episode 16. The Avengers versus X-Men episode and other comic shit. So, alright, go ahead. Sorry. I just realized that I didn't do the intro and it's been 25 minutes.
Yeah, or essentially this is the Everybody versus Marvel Comics podcast.
Yeah, well, everyone versus the comics industry, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure you could bitch about DC just as much.
Yeah.
There's a few books in DC I could bitch about, but for the most part, I'm pretty happy with the new 52.
I'm sorry, I disagree. I disagree just because their whole stance on reboot versus continuity, like, oh, this is only a reboot of some things. It's like, so you're telling me everything in Batman canon is perfectly canon, but if you go by that logic, everything in Teen Titans makes no sense because... Everything that happened with Tim Drake and his experience on Young Justice and Teen Titans are part of what made him into Red Robin. And now he's meeting all these characters that he met in Young Justice for the first time. It's like, oh god,
the brain. And the thing is a lot of the stories like Teen Titans, Justice League, Detective Comics, Action Comics, you know, stuff like that are set years before the actual present in the DC universe. So, like, current Batman is in the present. And when we hit, I think it's like JLA 8 is when they're going to hit the present too, and the origin story is going to be over. So, yeah, really, right now, they're setting up origin stories. And not yeah, but everything.
Here's the thing. They have not said anything of the like of this being 5 years in the past, like they've done with Justice League, to explain Superboy, to explain Teen Titans, to explain any of that. They have not made the distinction that this is the past. They have made it kind of clear that this is still the present, which is my headache comes
to. And Batgirl is another thing where they mentioned that she was shot by the Joker, but now she's healed, so they screwed up all that continuity too.
No, that's hand-wavium.
Yep.
It magically cures paralysis and, death.
Apparently the explanation is she had an experimental surgery or something, which is why she's now no longer in the wheelchair.
Hand-wavium.
My problem is them saying she was shot only 3 years ago, to which I have to say, they're going to still play the everything is still in continuity and claim everything that Barbara Gordon did while in the wheelchair took place over the course of 3 years. Exactly. My problem is DC either has to go full hog reboot or don't reboot at all, because this mixed thing. The only books that haven't rebooted are Batman and Green Lantern. That's because the only books that were selling good before Flashpoint were Batman books and Green Lantern books.
Well, let's be fair. The DC universe has existed for roughly 80 years. And in those 80 years of stories where we have gone from, you know, cars and not even rotary telephones to the internet and, you know, people walking on the moon, that's only been like 5 years. So if you're going to be like freaked out because 15 years of story development for Barbara Gordon has now been put down to 3 years, you got to get in the whole, you know, DC Universe, Marvel Universe, Image Universe, all those places for definitely not occurring in real time.
Oh, God. I remember I had this equation in the 90s for the Spider-Man clone. Apparently the time between the 70s story when the clone first appeared and the 90s story where Ben Reilly came back to the comics was supposed to be 5 years, but in real time it was 20 years. So I had this theory that in comic book time, you know, all the developments of 20 years had occurred over 5 years.
Yeah. I think that in comic book time, the conversion is yes.
Then you just pull a Constantine and just have it like he ages in real time. Or used to.
I don't know. I think trying to ascribe anything real, you know, resembling anything real in comic books is just it's an exercise in futility.
I'm fine with them keeping weird years and jumps in time, but it's like when they mess up the continuity like they have with 52 and Batman, like make it clear and just go one way or the other. Reboot or don't, you know, it's...
Yeah, that's the other thing, is the Justice League reboot. I'm not actually hating the Justice League reboot. I like the epic storyline. I like the fact that when they all first meet, they don't like each other. I like the fact that they're only working together because Darkseid's there and causing problems. But them saying, this is 5 years ago. Like, 5 years. So you're telling me that in the space of 5 years, all those major storylines, like Death of Superman, Nightfall, all these things happen only in a space of 5 years. I'm just like, no. Go at least 10 years.
Well, I think Death of Superman hasn't happened. I don't think...
It's official. It's still in continuity.
I won't actually buy that until we see whatever this universe's iteration of Doomsday looks like.
Like I said, that's my problem. Is DC, as far as their explanations for what's in canon and what isn't, has become just convoluted and confusing despite them streamlining their books. Somehow they've managed to go both ways at the same time. Marvel at least has consistently stuck with convolution. I can respect that.
Well, and when you mentioned streamlining the books, I mean, like Tom was saying, there are 9 different issues within the New 52 that feature Batman in one way or another. If you're supposed to be streamlining it, it's one Batman, it's one Green Lantern, it's one Superman. I don't know how they're, when they bring Action Comics up to speed with Superman, or are they not going to? Is Action Comics going to remain?
They are. I mean, right now they're just giving some good origin story to give you an idea of what developed Superman into what he is in the New 52. So like the first big story arc for that is really, I guess, I mean, I'm guessing it's Brainiac, but they're just calling it the Collector and stuff. And, you know, they're introducing, like, Steel has already been introduced. Metallo has already been introduced. Lex Luthor, Jimmy Olsen, and Lois Lane.
Lois's dad.
Yeah, Lois's dad. It's they're doing a lot of really cool stuff. And, like, that first, like, five-issue run on Action Comics is great. I'm sad that they broke it up to bring in this other story involving time travel and the Legion of Superheroes, who I always thought were stupid.
The Legion of Superheroes work. It's just when they try and involve them too much in mainstream DC comics, that's when the problem falls apart. I mean, if you ever saw the cartoon Superman and the Legion of Superheroes, they kept that all in the Legion's future, and that was actually really well done. I thought that was a very well-handled use of
always been my major problem with Legion and superheroes. Now, technically speaking, as we move forward culturally, sociologically, evolutionarily, we're supposed to become stronger and, like, better and all this stuff. And why is the Justice League able to kick the crap out of them at every turn?
Because they suck. You don't seem to realize the most important law of comic book universe is this. Popularity equals power. This is how characters always manage to trump other characters despite the glaring flaws of logic, such
hence
as
why Batman will always win.
I mean, Batman's awesome, and
Batman's an asshole.
You're just mad because he'd win.
No, here's the thing. I haven't forgiven Batman for a lot of things that he's done. I haven't forgiven Iron Man and Reed Richards for Civil War.
You just hate rich, smart people.
No, here's the thing. When I was a kid, Fantastic Four was my favorite thing. Like, when we would go out at recess and pretend to be superheroes, I was Mr. Fantastic every single time. And then the asshole stuff that he and Tony Stark pulled during Civil War, just, I still haven't forgiven them for that.
See, I love that you mentioned Civil War first and not, like, Planet Hulk.
Okay,
that
true.
Was...
Yeah.
All right, Ickish. You've got me there. Planet Hulk as
awesome
well.
Awesome storyline, but still.
Yeah. Well, in the defense of Reed Richards and Tony Stark, I mean, that was a huge event, you know, to start things. I mean, there were a lot of civilian lives. They really kind of had to look at, you know, the ramifications of, you know, superpowers and super battles and supervillains and all that stuff. And yeah, they had a knee-jerk reaction. Just, it was the wrong one. I mean, ultimately, especially those two, they're only human.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the X-Men. You can't blame them because they're mutants and thus are incapable of understanding human emotions. But
what? Wait, what?
No, I was just making a racist comment about mutants.
Are we really going to go into the racist politics of the Marvel Universe now?
No, I'm just, but, you know, I mean, especially like Tony Stark was in a situation. I mean, he was, you know, what, Secretary of Defense or something at the time?
Yeah, and then he became, you know, head of S.H.I.E.L.D. after.
Yeah, so I mean. Yeah. He kind of had to come up with something and, you know, to do something. And, I mean, it was, I mean, they were in a way, they were mirroring, you know, the feelings of Americans following, you know, 9/11 with our whole knee jerk reaction of the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's just, I mean, they've both come out and, you know, essentially, well, maybe not Richards, but Tony Stark definitely has. And, you know, you got to forgive him, especially considering what he did in Fear Itself to make sure that we could win.
Well, see, I haven't read Fear Itself.
I have a feeling that the X-Men Avengers is going to turn into a Occupy Wall Street parallel very quickly. Because they seem to mirror...
No, Frank Miller's already working on the Occupy Wall Street parallel where RoboCop beats up the Occupy guys and makes them join the military.
No, the pepper spray guy is RoboCop.
God, Frank Miller needs to never write anything again.
No, he just needs to not ever.
Actually, I kind of look at the X-Men Avengers fight as sort of like a religion versus politics kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just because when you look at the preview pages they've given for Avengers versus X-Men 1, the way Cyclops talks about the Phoenix Force, you know, that it's a sign of rebirth, it's a sign of things, and the fact that they're all fixating that the Phoenix is going to choose Hope Summers, and that's just what they think is going to happen. I don't know, I think they might actually pull a switch on us and it picks someone else, but the fact is, they're playing this whole thing with Hope being the messiah of mutants, and the fact that the Avengers, their concern isn't so much with this whole messianic thing, it's the fact that, as far as they're concerned, the Phoenix is a very dangerous force, and it coming to Earth is a problem.
Yeah.
And this is the first time
It has to be Hope or Jean Grey if they're going to bring her back again. Because anyone else who's ever served as a host for the Phoenix isn't powerful enough to contain it like Jean Grey was. Or Cannon. You know, it's just, it has to be a Grey or a Summers. That's how it has to be, or how we are conditioned to think.
But yeah, my point about the idea of religion and protection is that we have Captain America and Iron Man, who for the first time in a while are actually on each other's side and actually cooler than they've been for a while. And their response when they find out the Phoenix is coming is, this is bad. We have to make sure that everyone is protected. Because every time the Phoenix shows up, whether it does something good or not in the process, lots of property damage tends to happen. Lots of people tend to die when the Phoenix appears.
Yeah.
So, and the fact that Cyclops is so feverishly attached to this idea that the Phoenix is going to make everything better for mutants, despite the fact that, you know, consistently he has run this whole thing where the Phoenix has taken from him more than it's given. Yeah, it may have brought Jean Grey back to life a few times, but the reality is the first time he lost Jean was because of Phoenix. This is a man who
every time he's lost it subsequently.
And the thing is, every time the Phoenix shows up, this guy should be ready to shoot it to death with his eyeball lasers. And instead, now he's just, because of the way he's been since M-Day, Jean's death, Civil War, pretty much turning the mutant community into all registered people on the superhuman watch list. Everything has consistently pushed him to this point that he has it in his mind that this is, you know, the God-given way for them to fix their lives. And I like the way that Wolverine in the preview image just says to Captain America that Cyclops is going to run an agenda, and he's not even going to know he's running an agenda, because that's how he is.
Yeah. Well, Cyclops is right. Always. Eh? He's just right. Even when he's wrong.
I blame Professor X for that. That's bad upbringing right there.
I don't know. I think, yeah, speaking of bad upbringing, though, I think Wolverine and the X-Men has a very good potential for some terrible upbringing of a particular mutant in there who may or may not be a clone of somebody whose name rhymes with Shmupocalypse. You know, we'll see how that plays out when Captain America finds out about that one.
That's assuming that Wolverine doesn't, you know, decide to switch sides in the middle, because that's the big question of Avengers versus X-Men is, who's Wolverine going to side with? I mean, for the most part, the preview pages, some of the covers, he's on the Avengers side. But the reality is, Wolverine, I remember when Grant Morrison was writing his X-Men run, there was that, no, it wasn't Grant Morrison, sorry, Joss Whedon, when he was doing Astonishing X-Men, there was that part where Wolverine beat the crap out of Beast because Beast was tempted to take that mutant cure.
Yeah.
I mean, Beast's logic for it was, you know, he's slowly changing more and more. What if he ends up eventually mentally devolving into an animal?
But Wolverine already happened to him in X-Factor.
Yeah, but the point is, Wolverine was like, you know, we're mutants, you know, mutant pride, that whole thing. Like, you know, we don't need to change anything. There's no cure for us. Wolverine is the guy who you wouldn't expect to believe in an idealistic cause like the X-Men, and that's what's the poetry of Wolverine, is that he believes in it more than anyone. He's the one that is willing to die for it more than anyone. Even though he has yet to die for it, he's the one that openly is ready to die for it. And that's the thing, is I don't know how long he's going to be able to try and stand against Cyclops and Cyclops's agenda of, you know, fixing everything and putting mutants back on top. You know, the Magneto agenda, so to speak.
Well, I think I think he'll have a really easy time of standing up against Phoenix, because he has that personal connection and that realization that Phoenix is why he also keeps losing Jean. So he has a pretty good idea of what Phoenix is capable of, and will, I think, look past the mutant issue and look more towards the Phoenix issue first.
Yeah, I think
the other thing is, I like the fact that Wolverine has become, you know, headmaster, and it's given him a new character, like this whole, you know, he doesn't want kids to fight. I mean, this is a side to him that never really put too much thought into, since he's like trained how many teen sidekicks over his lifetime. But
yeah, but at the same time, it's like Wolverine, out of all of the X-Men, has always been the one who's been able to detach himself and stop drinking the Kool-Aid, as it were. You know, yeah. So I mean, he definitely agrees that mutant kind needs to continue on into the future, but backing the Phoenix on this is just, that's suicide. Just suicide. Yeah.
And that, again, is why Wolverine has popularity power that allows him to do anything, is because of things like this.
Well, let's be honest here. The big fight I want to see is Magneto versus Iron Man, because that just writes itself.
Especially since Iron Man's armor is now part of his body. Like, it grows out of his skin now, so that's just going to be, well, that's going to be Magneto versus Wolverine all over again.
We've really seen that battle already, and it didn't go well for Wolverine.
Yeah, and then popularity power be damned. It didn't go well for Magneto immediately afterwards either.
True.
Oh man, Charlie Xavier was pissed.
The fight I'm looking, there are two fights I'm looking forward to. Actually, I think three fights by my basis of my prejudices in Marvel Comics. One, of course, is the Captain America Cyclops one, just because these are two very idealistic characters, but in two different kind of ideals.
Let's be honest, and here, Captain America is going to kick his ass. It's going to
Hell yeah.
It's going to be real quick, too.
Are you kidding? That's going to be the climax book.
No, but still, like, if you really sat those guys down for a fight, like, Captain America would, like, wing his shield out one way, and then, like, you know, Scott Summers' neck would be broke, and then Cap would be like, what?
Well, I think no matter what, actually, I mean, Captain America has a lot more experience. He's got the strength, he's got the agility, he's got the shield. I think Captain America easily has Scott Summers beat.
Yeah, the only person who has more practical experience than Captain America is Wolverine.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other two fights I'm looking for, and this is just because I'm a fanboy for these characters, is whichever major fights Spider-Man and Wolverine are going to get into. Because one, the fight Wolverine gets into is going to say a lot about his character in this event.
Yeah.
And the Spider-Man one is just because I am an absolute whore for all things Spidey, and I personally am hoping it's Iceman, because dear God in heaven, spider friends, we need to, you know, resolve that conflict.
Well, they won't, because it looks like Wolverine's X-Men are going to be siding with the Avengers on this.
Yeah, that's
totally cool, because Iceman and Spider-Man fighting together, infinitely cool.
That's even better.
Well, yeah, it's either the battle of, like, quips against each other, or side-by-side quips against a common enemy. It's like, you either have an outwit each other battle with little witticisms, or you can put them both towards someone else, and I'd kind of like to see it both ways.
I think they should have a quip off.
There's actually one tie-in with Avengers vs. X-Men I'm looking forward to, just because it's a brilliant idea, and that's the AVX miniseries, because that's just going to, according to the press releases and everything, that's just going to be single-issue storylines of fights during Avengers vs. X-Men.
Oh, yeah, the Versus series.
Brought out in detail. Yeah, they're just going to bring it up into full detail.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, because that's one thing I was actually hoping for out of Civil War, was that we'd actually see, because they during the main Civil War book, or any of the spin-off books like Spider-Man or whatnot that looked at from different sides, they didn't seem to get into as much detail of the fights like you could have. And I'm just thinking that would be awesome, just because I would love if there was like one single issue special set during the climax of Civil War that was just Iron Man and Captain America during the finale of it going at each other. So I think that that's at least one clever tie-in.
I just want to see Red Hulk take on Colossus Juggernaut. Juggernaut.
That sounds like a Marvel.
Colossinaut?
I guess
that sounds like something out of the Colossinaut and Red Hulk going at each other. I just, for some reason, I keep picturing Zangief from Capcom jumping in. Because come on. Every Marvel versus Capcom game, who do they always in an image pair up in a fight, because they're all big and they have essentially the same animation sprite size?
Hulk, my question is, has Reed Richards ever made it into a MVC game?
No.
Because Reed Richards versus Dhalsim?
That could be pretty incredible.
That would just end up, they'd all just be tangled, and they'd just be like, oh, God, is that you? Is that me? No, don't, no, that's the tender area, you know, and like, I think that'd be great. That needs to happen.
I could have fun playing as Mr. Fantastic in an MVC game.
Actually, have they said anything about what the Future Foundation or Fantastic Four, whatever they're calling themselves now, are going to do during this event?
No, they're probably not going to be involved in it, even though half of their membership. And the Thing. Thing's part of the Avengers.
That's a good one. Thing versus Colossonaut.
I think that actually might be one of the pictures, actually. Or one of the covers.
Oh. My laptop's too crappy, so I can't really multitask with it while recording.
My computer is awesome. Totally multitasking.
Well, I'm on an 8-year-old laptop right now to do this.
Also, I just gotta ask. I understand the logic behind it, but the Submariner on the X-Men. It's like, why is he there? I understand that their logic about it, you know, Atlantean mutants, whatever. But at the same time, it's Namor. This is a man whose entire career in the Marvel Universe, since the Stan Lee days, has consistently been to make shit worse.
Which is actually fitting for him to be on the X-Men side during this, because they're making shit worse.
Oh no, it's Namor versus the Thing. And we have She-Hulk versus Rogue.
Oh jeez.
That could be an interesting
Throw the mud. Fight. Throw the mud.
Yeah.
But
I need a cold shower.
Apparently Mr. the Submariner is a mutant, and that's why he's with the X-Men.
Well, yeah, of course he's a mutant. He's a fish man with wings on his feet.
Yeah, who looks human compared to the rest of the Atlanteans that look like fishmen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I prefer Aquaman for my King of Atlantis.
Aquaman is a bit more badass, I would say, than Namor.
And in the new 52, he's actually pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Aquaman's also just more tolerable than Namor, because Namor's an asshole. Namor, every time Namor's in a comic, I want to slap him, and I know it wouldn't work, but still.
Namor's always been a jerk.
And yeah, that's what you get when you have a body that screams, only wear a Speedo at all times.
Sorry to sidetrack here, but I was just... going around, and apparently at Toy Fair they just debuted the Avengers Lego stuff for the movie. And there's even a Quinjet aerial battle set.
Yeah.
That could be kind of awesome.
Yeah, here I'll
here's the thing I'm concerned about with Avengers versus X-Men. It's a 12-issue book. I mean, my God, I mean, so basically, this storyline is going to go for a year, and not even from now. It's going to start in March and go for a year.
Yeah.
This is going to be...
Yeah.
And that's one thing I don't like about these event books. They could be pushing
multiple books a month. Yeah, well, I mean, it makes sense for some... it makes sense for some events. Like Flashpoint made sense to be a 5-month long event, but it was 5 months. Fear itself made no sense being a 7 to 8 month long event.
Huh. And you know, it's just what I'm worried about.
Shit.
Well, it's just, if you looked at the sales for the last month, the top 10 books were all DC books. Marvel has to up their game. You know, and they think that means that they have to throw crazy events of all of the, like, fan service fights that we've wanted for the last 30 years.
They need to simplify their series again. They need to pull an Ultimates and make it work this time.
The current Ultimate run is actually pretty good.
I think the Ultimates was fantastic, and it's a good entry point, and it hasn't gotten too confusing yet. They should have just done what DC did with a new 52 and try to grab new fans. This is, you know, even if a fan picks it up.
Isn't that what they're doing with their new line of season one books?
No, those are just like to get people into, you know, really quickly up to date with stuff. is my understanding of it. As like the thing that here's what I would kind of like to see, because we all know that the Marvel Universe is Earth 616. Why can't we have, from like say now, the X-Men being like 617, and then the Avengers and like Captain America and everybody else being 618, or continuing 616? And then, you know, like, they both, each group still exists in each other's universe, but what's going on in the Avengers universe doesn't affect what's going on in the X-Men universe, and vice versa. So that way you can have, like, they're two big, essentially, you know, the mutant universe, and then the, you know, meta-human universe, essentially.
But then they'd start doing crossovers and dumping things everywhere.
And then it just becomes a problem all over again.
Yeah,
and the thing is, I don't want them to do a reboot thing, because that's one thing I've always respected Marvel for, is they've never had to reboot to keep telling stories. And
well,
to quote,
in 30 years, Marvel will probably have to when they catch up with DC.
Well, and Marvel is fractured as shit. I mean, there's,
and they don't even have to reboot everything, but they need to find a way to simplify the books. I mean, because X-Men, I started reading X-Men when I was like 9-10 years old. I mean, I was reading it, you know, through Claremont and everything. And when I dropped out for even just a year or so, when I just wasn't picking up comics that regularly, it was almost impossible to get back to it. And it still is. Like, if you haven't been reading all these books and you didn't read Civil War and you didn't read Fear Itself and House of M, you have no idea what the hell's going on.
Yeah, here's one huge factor that we have now that we didn't have when we were kids, and that's the internet. We have the ability to actually go online and find out what has happened in recent storylines. So,
true, but I'm not sure how many people want to take that time to read 5 wiki pages and try to map the continuity out just so they can go spend $20 every week on new comics. Like, I just think that still acts as a barrier where I don't want to necessarily go through that to join a new book.
Yeah, the barrier to entry for all Marvel books is obscenely high.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, even the DC books pre-New 52, the barrier to entry wasn't as bad, because you look at it and like the big, huge events in DC Universe, the death of Superman, the crippling of Batman, the death of Jason Todd Robin, that gets covered by the news. Like, legitimate news agencies go, you know, and in This Week in Comics, Superman died, you know, because like, characters like Batman and Superman, well, yes, Spider-Man, the X-Men, the Avengers, they all very much resonate with your standard comic book nerd. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, those characters are ingrained in American culture.
They also, their storylines that are huge and resonate and get reported on are pretty simple. Like, hey, Superman died and he came back. There's nothing else that changed dramatically, whereas Civil War altered the entire dynamics of every character.
Yeah, it's like, it would take more than an hour to sit down and actually explain the nuances of Fear Itself.
Right, whereas Batman getting his back broken or Superman dying are pretty simple and quick, and hey, Robin died and Batman's depressed, now you can go on.
And it was voted on and people voted to kill Jason Todd Robin.
Right, it's pretty simple, so even their big stuff has been kept accessible. Whereas Marvel, like, if you didn't read Civil War or House of M, you don't know what the hell's going on, even if you read all of the books. Like, you still feel like you're missing out on the characterization and what's
and,
changed.
And even their smaller
and that is a problem, yeah.
Like, going back to the 90s with Executioner's Song, right? Like, I remember trying to come in on that, and I came in at the start of it, and I was like, okay, who are all of these people? Why is Apocalypse almost dead? Why does that guy look just like Cable but wear a stupid hat? You know, like, I mean, you look at that, and that's just ridiculous. And that covered every X book, X Force, X Factor, Uncanny X Men, you know. It doesn't help also that the X Men, I hate to say this, with the exception of Magneto, have a whole bunch of B listers for villains, you know.
But here's the thing. So I remember this quote from a comic reviewer online who said that in regards to rebooting, he's like, you don't have to reboot to get new readers, because he used the Justice League Teen Titans storyline, the Technus Imperative, as an example. He didn't know anything about Teen Titans until he read that book, but the writing of it was good enough that introduced him to the characters and made him want to learn more, which is what got him back into comics and going out to read classic Teen Titans stuff. And that's the thing, is that it's not so much we need a reboot, we need a streamline, we just need to actually tell stories that are good enough that new people can get in without trying to discount the people who have been following all along. And this is the problem. This one reason I'm enjoying the new Spidey run is because Dan Slott has actually, you know, achieved this level of, you know, friendly to new readers, but at the same time keeping longtime readers interested. And that's just it. It's not a matter of we need to reboot, streamline it. We just need actually really good writers to make these things more accessible. And
I thought,
if that happens, we're going to consist. Yes?
I was going to say, you know, I think Joss Whedon did a good job on that with Astonishing X-Men a while ago.
Yeah,
that
was
Avengers.
A good run.
The new Avengers, I thought, did a pretty good job of it. There's been a few with Marvel, but then they always duck out. You know, like they're too quick to jump back into this ridiculous continuity too fast and bring in old characters.
All comic companies, not just Marvel, but DC does it too. And like I said, you need consistent, good writing to keep these things, you know, accessible, as well as, you know, play off of what's happening in for long periods of time. And that's just the crux of it, is that we need as many good, talented storytellers in comics to keep these things from becoming too convoluted for new readers and keep them from having to do something that pisses off the longtime fans who have been invested for years, like some of us that have been following comics for decades.
Well, see, here's what I think, kind of my personal take on it, and this could be, you know, influenced by, you know, my work history and stuff in the past, but I think that really what needs to happen is, say, at the beginning of a year, especially with DC, they have a really good CCO now with Geoff Johns. They need to sit down with the main creators and, like, block out what's going to happen for this year, block out any events, the long-term ramifications. They need to sit down and really do this. They need to think. They need to play
the
long game.
Like they did in the 90s?
Yeah, that's what they need to do. They need to get back to that. You know, like, they really need to increase the pre-production, essentially, and, like, the planning and all this, and be like, all right, we're going to have, you know, Scott Snyder write, like, a 15-issue run on Batman, and then we're going to bring in, you know, this guy, and then we're going to go back to Snyder for this storyline, and bam, you know, and do that for all the books. Like, yes, I understand it's going to take a lot of time, it's going to take a lot of work, but you know what? That is their damn job.
And Marvel really...
They created a universe. They have to upkeep it.
Marvel really needs to do it because their movies are so popular that there's so many people that want to get into it now. Especially, you know, Avengers comes out in a couple months and people are going to want to read Avengers books, and they're going to pick up one issue, stare at it for 5 minutes, and then put it down. And they're never going to pick it up again. If they did something like what you're saying and had an idea, had a goal, and made it accessible, they'd probably pick up new readers every time they put out those new movies.
Yeah, but therein lies a catch-22 of the situation, is that as a result, you have books that might come across as more editorially mandated than writer-mandated, which always comes off as a problem. I'm not disagreeing with the idea that they need to actually go at the beginning of the year and decide what they're doing for the entire year as far as the stories go, but at the same time, they need to be careful about it, that it doesn't just become the editors and publishers are deciding the stories and then the writers have to basically shoehorn around this for business sake.
It's a fine line, but I think that the people that are writing comic books are probably talented enough to make all that work.
Yeah. Well, then there's another thing, just using your Avengers example. You have, like, let's say you make a special series of trades called, well, essentially the Essentials, and yes, I'm aware that they have that already. But you run the risk of, you know, people look at the movie Avengers and they see Black Widow, they see the Hulk, they see Thor, you know, Iron Man and Hawkeye, and they're going to pick up and be like, who's Hank Pym? Mm-hmm. You know, who is Wasp? Who is Vision? Who is the Scarlet Witch? Quicksilver? You know, I mean, the Avengers, just like the Justice League, have a very flexible roster. You know, people are going to pick that up and be like, why is Spider-Man here? I thought Wolverine was an X-Man, and I thought the Thing was part of the Fantastic Four. You know,
the way
I
always look at it, sorry, you were saying? I mean, I cut you off.
No, it's fine. I pretty much run my course.
It's like the thing I always look at is that every comic book universe has that one superhero team that basically everyone ends up joining at some point, like a sort of superhero community or superhero Facebook type of thing. So yeah. The Justice League for DC and the Avengers for Marvel. And what I really think is that maybe within like what Marvel's done is within the Avengers, they've, you know, broken up. So the main Avengers book, which is like, you know, the big name Avengers. Here's a new Avengers, which has like Spider-Man and Wolverine and the street level kind of heroes like Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And then you have like the Secret Avengers, who are like the Black Ops group. You just basically break it up. Like Marvel's actually doing a good job with this whole, you know, yes, it's a big team thing, but we're breaking up the groups into smaller groups so that we can keep it all organized.
Yay, more books and for them to cancel.
Well, it depends
like
on...
My favorite Moon Knight, those jerks.
That was depressing. Moon Knight, I loved him for a long time, and I really liked what they did when they brought him back. And
are you reading this current run? It's amazing.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic, yeah.
But no, it's getting canceled.
Yeah, of course. And dude,
the last issue was really good.
Marvel has a lot of really good second class or second tier heroes that I love. Like I loved Cloak and Dagger. I mean, I read them when I was younger, and they weren't great books, but they were fun. And they had an awesome run on the Spider Island miniseries, and that would be a great book for them to just bring back and resurrect, and would be simple for people to read and get back into comic books. And
well, they really need to push these second tier guys, because yeah. In all honesty, these second tier guys are more interesting than most of their top tier characters,
and they have all this leniency with the story where they don't have to be beholden to the continuity of the X-Men or the Avengers. They can kind of take these characters in a whole new direction,
and they're in cities where the Avengers and the X-Men have kind of just written off, like Moon Knight in LA. Like, why aren't there superheroes and supervillains in LA?
Yeah,
you know, but apparently there's just Moon Knight and that dude that fought with Thor that's being a
and
villain.
And the Runaways.
Yeah, well, whatever. You know, but
what? Like, I'm sorry. What was that? Whatever.
yeah, that was a whatever to the Runaways. I've never read them.
Oh,
before.
Come on, the Runaways is a good book.
Yeah, that's fine, but they're runaways, so that leads one to believe that they're constantly moving.
But they're not. They're you know, usually set in either San Francisco or LA, and usually living in some cave in the area.
Well, then that sounds like false advertising, because they are not running and they are not away.
But the idea was they ran away from their villain parent. You know, I'm not going to get to this now. This is another podcast.
The Runaways are a hero group whose parents are all villains?
They're basically a bunch of kids who. They find out that their parents are basically, each of their parents are one set of cliche kind of villain in the Marvel Universe. You have like the criminal masterminds, you have the time travelers, the mutants, the aliens, and they're all like, wait, what? And they realize their parents are sadistic, evil monsters who sacrifice innocent children to some dark gods to keep their family safe. So the kid's like, screw this, we're out of here.
Huh. Don't they have like a velociraptor too?
Yeah, the time traveler parents, they basically had a velociraptor coded to respond to the brainwaves of their daughter so it would be her bodyguard.
That's awesome.
That would be an interesting book. See, but Marvel's got so much stuff, they need to quit focusing on these big events with like Avengers and X-Men and pull out their incredible second-tier guys that they haven't been using
Ghost
for
Rider.
10, 15 years.
No, Ghost Rider's... He's so boring, though.
I'm sorry. During the Civil War era, you know, when everyone was, you know, fighting each other, or Tony Stark was in charge of all world security, they had this really good run for Ghost Rider where Johnny Blaze finally went to hell for selling his soul to the devil. And when he finally broke out, it was part of some plan for the devil to escape hell and rain down on Earth. So Johnny had to go around the world collecting all the fallen pieces of the devil, killing it, and hopefully stopping it when it was merged together into one entity so he could save the world.
He's not even the Ghost Rider anymore.
Well, it depends on your definition of Ghost Rider anymore, because they've tap danced around that. I mean, in the 70s,
well,
it was
he's
bound to him.
Yeah, well, he's flat out not Ghost Rider anymore. It's some girl from, like, Guatemala.
I thought he still had his powers, but...
Nope, she has the powers. He's just a normal human being who happens to know a whole bunch of stuff about the occult, like John Constantine, but minus the chain-smoking and snarky Britishness.
And well, awesome. Where's the fun in that?
Yeah, exactly.
He has a motorcycle. That makes it more fun.
But he's not snarky British and chain smoking. Like, that, you know, that's just great. Hmm. So, hold on, but John Constantine, part of the main DC universe
I'll be right
now.
Back.
All right. Yeah, no, my favorite John Constantine appearance was actually in Sandman, when Sandman is looking for one of his relics.
Yeah, that was an incredible, incredible run.
Yeah. That's actually some of the few Sandman that I have read, was that first, like, big arc where he's getting all of his shit back.
Mm. The whole the whole series was so fantastic, in my opinion, because it really, he built this character and gave it so much depth, and then the end of the character and everything, it was fantastic.
Oh, that the arc where he adapted Midsummer Night's Dream, he actually won a fantasy writing award for that, and as soon as he won it, the award giver, Outer People, actually changed the rules so a comic book couldn't win that award again in the future.
I remember that. Which is so sad, because
yes.
Vertigo is a really great example to bring up, because they have such a good track record of releasing their trades and making things understandable so people can come back in any time and go back and read older books and buy whole runs of things. And I love the way that Vertigo has always handled comic books.
I actually like the fact that in the New 52 they've integrated more of the Vertigo line into the main universe, like Constantine being part of Justice League Dark, or Swamp Thing actually returning to the mainstream DC universe.
iVampire, I think, yeah, that was a Vertigo title, wasn't it?
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah, I read the first issue of everything in the New 52 just to get an idea, and like over half of them I was like, these are okay, but I'm not going to read this. You know, like I thought Swamp Thing was really good, but it's not for me. And I was just like, you know, Justice League Dark, I've just finished out their first story arc, and I still am on the fence about that one.
I think it's an awesome concept.
Yeah, I do like the idea. I don't like New Zatanna. I don't like that she looks like David Blaine, except a girl. I miss the old outfit. It was so much better looking.
I don't know what she looks like now. Does she no longer have the top hat and the fishnets?
No, no. Now she wears all black but has fishnet sleeves.
Oh.
And pants. She wears pants. And I'm just like, okay, done.
See, that's not Zatanna.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as I said, she's like, you know, like, you know, one of the modern magicians is what she looks like, and not like the old classic stuff.
Zatanna always confused me, just kind of vexed me, because seriously, every major problem in the DC universe, if she could find a way to solve it by saying it backwards, she could. Doomsday here. Doomsday's gone. Where the hell was she during Death of Superman?
She was probably finding Handwavium to future save Barbara Gordon's spine. That's exactly what she was doing. No, but they do have the whole thing of, like, the backwards magic is very dangerous, and that, you know, she shouldn't use it all the time, even though she uses it all the time. But, you know, and she's always like, oh, it's really dangerous, and it doesn't always work. But, you know, again, it does always work, and she does use it all the time. And it just is like, really? It seems disingenuous. Why are you lying to us, Zatanna? I mean, I'm sure, yes, we all kind of, like, write it off and say, oh, it's fine, she's totally telling us the truth because she has killer legs and always wears those fishnets and underwear. And, okay, I think we just figured out the secret of her magic, but...
It's in the fishnet stockings, of course.
Yeah, well, no wonder her
magic... That's why she has to wear them on her arms.
It's all about diverting attention. That's the trick of any good illusionist, is diverting attention.
Well,
and Zatanna was good at that.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, but in Justice League Dark, her magic kind of sucks. It's obviously because the fishnets are on the wrong part of her body.
Sure.
You know, seriously, I think that if DC could find a way to get away with it, they would, for the New 52, bring Sandman into it.
Ned, are you talking about Neil's Sandman or Justice Society Sandman?
Neil Gaiman Sandman. If they could find a way to bring it in without the fans lynching...
Not in the New 52, but he's definitely shown up in Justice League story arcs.
Yeah, I remember that. Usually they do a Starro.
Daniel did, yeah. I think the second Daniel Sandman. Green.
Yeah, the young Sandman.
I can see them pulling in the new Watchmen titles into some Justice League or something like that at some point.
No. They will not risk it.
Oh, they're risking bringing it back.
I'm still surprised they're even risking making them. You know, like I don't get why people love Watchmen. I don't. Like I admit that it's good, and Alan Moore is generally very good, but I hate it. I think it's stupid. I think that the best deconstruction of the superhero was done with the original Dark Knight Returns. You know, and it's just, I just was like, whatever. This is. I don't see why people get all up in arms about it. I don't see why people were all like super crazy about the movie for it because the movie wasn't very good. And I watched the unrated one, which had the hot sex in it.
I gotta disagree with you about that because Watchmen is a great deconstruction of the team book, the universe book, you know, that whole idea of the superhero universe. And then at the same time, the film was a great film because I've never seen a film that adapted a graphic novel so perfectly without running the risk of being 5 hours long. And the reason Watchmen is so good is because the people love Watchmen is the quality of the writing, the quality of the plot. If you look at Watchmen, just every panel, everything is so meticulously designed to be, you know, a perfect way to tie back in. Like, you know, Alan Moore constructed, like, one of the best graphic novels panel by panel so that no matter what, it constantly is a recurring theme, recurring images. That one issue, Fearful Symmetry, actually had, like, one of the best panel designs of all time because each panel of the book, if you start from the first page and the last page and work your way down, each page, the panels mirror each other until you get to the middle and it's like one massive, you know, mixed mirror kind of image.
Well, yeah, but that's just Alan Moore's style. I mean, you can get of that in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You can get all of that in V for Vendetta.
I know. But the other thing is Watchmen came out at a very important time in comics alongside Dark Knight Returns. It was one of those books that while Frank Miller's book basically went to how brutal and violent and everything, Alan Moore's Watchmen went into this whole idea of how intelligent a comic book can be. And the main reason a lot of people love it is because, like, as much as I disagree with it, they keep going on that it's the ultimate deconstruction of a superhero. And my argument in Watchmen, because I love it, in our world, like, these people aren't superheroes because I have yet to see a decent motive why these people are dressing up and beating up criminals. None of them have a decent motive for why. None of them. It's like, I got bored. I saw people were doing it, so I put on get the hell out. Get the hell out.
I don't know. I actually really am a huge fan of The Watchmen, but more in theory because I think the book's a little bit overwrought. But everything in the books, like that one novel, covers everyone's backstory and history. There's really no material for a continued series because you have their origins up until most of their deaths. So I'm really curious about what the hell they're even going to do without completely wrecking the continuity there is, which is why I wouldn't be surprised if they start throwing it into other books just to use them because Warshak's cool, you know?
They wouldn't risk that much. I mean, yeah, Rorschach's cool, and that's why they brought it back. But at the same time, I don't think they're going to risk it. But just from a fair point of view, I can imagine that there's a lot of young writers and artists who grew up with Watchmen and loved it. And even though fans would probably have a riot, they're probably like, oh my god, I actually get to work on a Watchmen prequel. And the level of talent being brought into the Watchmen prequels, you know, just makes me want to see what they can do before I start just tossing stones at them.
I'm one of those people that I'm really good at judging and being extremely hipster about things that I like. But I'm going to read the books. I'll read them and try to like them and be embarrassed when I have to say I was wrong. It's just fun to complain about it first.
Avengers versus X-Men. Which side are you guys on?
As much as I kind of hate to say it, because I do think that the character is overplayed, I'm going to have to side with wherever Wolverine ends up siding, because, he's kind of the old man, and he's the old wise man of this group. I mean, he's like 150 years old. He knows everyone, he's been through everything. You know, wherever he ends up is probably going to end up being the right side. So, not that I care if I end up on the right or the wrong side. I just think that his, you know, where his standpoint on things is going to be, you know, the one that I would tend to most agree with.
I'm on the Avengers side of things. Mostly because if anyone thinks that the Phoenix Force has ever shown up in the Marvel Universe and not done infinitely more damage, then they're retarded. And Cyclops is a douche, so I want to see him lose, basically.
I agree about the Wolverine point, because, you know, he's probably going to be the... If anything happens to change Wolverine's mind, it's going to be something that he sees that he realizes and will change the dynamic of what the Phoenix is bringing. But honestly, overall, I'm sticking with the Avengers just because the X-Men have slowly but surely turned from what they were intended to be. You know, the example of how mutants can be good people, aren't the enemy of humanity, all that. They have slowly turned from that ideal into what Magneto always believed. You know, they are the protectors of mutants from humans. They are the preservers of mutants' existence and their right to live and, you know, be the next evolutionary step in humanity. And that's why I'm siding with the Avengers, because the Avengers have gone from just being the establishment to being the heroes that actually care about the entire planet, the entire spectrum of life on Earth. And the X-Men have just become this militant mutant group under Cyclops's new rule. And I'm sorry, it's just they've become what they've always fought against, and that's why I'm siding with the Avengers, because I think the Avengers have the better idea.
Oh, can I just like to take this moment to add, because I just thought about this, all bets are off if Jean Grey comes back.
Yeah.
If Jean Grey comes back...
If Jean Grey comes back, Wolverine is doing whatever she says, because... Yeah. Let's be honest here.
The man loves his redheads.
I don't know, because in the past he's done what he's had to do in order to stop Phoenix, even when it was Jean Grey.
Yeah, but it's been so long since she's been around, and I mean, he named the damn school after her.
Yeah.
That might be a nice little
statue of her already there.
Yeah, so this is... Yeah, if she comes back, Wolverine's opinion is suddenly null and void.
Yeah. I'd probably side with the Avengers in this, because I think Cyclops is not seeing things clearly, just because of his experience with Phoenix, with the mutants right now, with Jean.
He's could not be his seeing things straight. Rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
Hey, they are rose-colored.
That was the joke.
That was.
I know. I will be as obvious as humanly possible.
Okay. Well. Cool. Do you guys have anything else to add into this that won't take another 2 hours?
Star Wars: The Old Republic is awesome.
Right, cool.
I am looking extremely forward to this year's comic book movies, and I'm going to be doing an analysis on the previous entries just for the sake of it.
Oh, smart idea.
Yeah, Chris, a little quick thing. Apparently a buddy of mine is getting me an early Mass Effect 3 demo code. So I'll be playing that hopefully this week.
Awesome.
Good deal.
Sounds like fun. Yeah, Lindsay started playing it through work, so I've already seen it.
Yeah, but I'm your Mass Effect guy.
Tom hates you.
Okay.
All right, well, you can find us at maroonersrock.com, twitter.com/maroonersrock, or at maroonersrock, and facebook.com/maroonersrock. Thanks for being on today. Thanks for the conversation, and we'll see you guys next week.
Sounds good.
See you around.